Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you're listening to this from. My name is Alan and I am now one of the co-hosts of the Digitally Downloaded podcast, Digitally Uploaded. With me this week is the editor-in-chief of the site, Matt Sainsbury. Say hello, Matt.
Hello, I've been disposed.
You have absolutely been disposed.
Alan's run a coup, yeah. It's been a coup. It's been very bloody. There's been gore everywhere. Yeah. The Digitally Downloaded offices today. It did this week. Yeah. It was very violent.
Very mean messages over Slack. And then Matt got upset and left. So that was the way I did it. And it was almost a little bit too much blood, but not enough for me. And we also have the issue this week where we have two people with the same first name. So it's going to be real fun for everyone. We have Matt as well.
Who's Matt?
Exactly.
Is that me? Or is that the other guy?
It's actually me. So confused. There's actually three Matts in this podcast. I lied about my own name.
Yeah. You joke, but we've been there before.
Yeah. So the worst thing is that I've tried to distinguish with you guys before in different ways, but it's never really worked all that well. So I don't think there is a way to do it so far, and I'm going to keep getting really mad about it, but that's all right.
just call the other guy Miku or Chief,
yeah,
or something like that.
I don't know how to feel about calling Matt Chief.
It's shorter than calling him Editor in Chief every time.
It is. Or we can call him Ed. Name is now Ed.
Ed. All right. That's good.
I can be Ed. That's good.
He's now Ed. Alrighty. So we're going to start this podcast off with a little bit of Miku music. I don't know what it is yet, but it's going to be something Miku based.
Welcome back, everybody. Okay, so Games of May. It's already, 5 months into the year. Jesus, it's going fast.
It's not okay.
It's not good at all. May is going to come and go, and you're going to end up with a whole crap load of games on your backlog because it's going to be a busy month, which is good and bad, I guess. Good if you like games, bad if you like finishing them. Okay, so let's have a look at what's coming out on the PS4. First up, City of Brass comes out on May 4, and that's a really neat looking game. It's a roguelike first-person shooter thing by an Aussie development team that's actually set in the kind of Arabian Nights world and fantasy, and that's looking really great. I can't wait for that. We've got Conan Exiles coming out on May 8, which looks neat. Same day comes Mega Dimension Neptunia VIIR, which is Mega Dimension Neptunia plus VR, but not necessarily to have VR if you don't have a VR unit, which is very confusing, but yeah, it's good. What else we got? We skip past Destiny because no one gives a crap about Destiny. Little Witch Academia, Chamber of Time, looks pretty neat. That comes out on May 15, and that's an RPG thingy. Dragon's Crown Pro comes out on the same day, and that is that's the PS4 port extended edition, whatever you want to call it, of a really good PS3 and Vita game by Vanillaware. Then we've got Hitman comes out on May 15, which is... That should be pretty good. That's like the complete edition, I think, which is
edition. Which I've never played those games before. It's essentially a Rube Goldberg machine of puzzles, which I think is awesome. So if you give it a shot, it's very, very
fun. It was an episodic series. Now it looks like it's going to, well, now it's, you know, in one complete package, which is good for people that prefer to play things from end to end. There's a One Piece game coming out. I don't know much about those. I don't follow them. There's like one every couple of months, and I'm sure One Piece fans will look forward to that. Dark Souls Remastered comes out on May 25. The Dark Souls Remasters. Not on Switch. That comes out later, but PS4, which is fine, since you can only play that at the moment on PS3. Pixel Junk Monsters 2 comes out on May 25, and that's going to be awesome. That's the best tower defense. Oh, that's a sequel to the best tower defense game that has ever been made.
You've also missed three games, Matt, that are coming
out. I'm getting there.
Fine.
you can fill in all the gaps in a moment, Alan. Detroit comes out on May 25. If you can handle David Cage, you probably look
forward to that. There's going to be space lights. There will be space lights immediately. And then really awkward stuff.
May 29 brings us a new Harvest Moon, Harvest Moon Light of Hope, and everybody loves Harvest Moon, so that's good. May 29 also brings us Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection and Sega Genesis Classics for retro gamers. Right, now Switch, and then Alan will fill in all the gaps. Switch, we have nothing at the start of the month. Well, there's lots of indie stuff, but and ports, but the first big one for the month comes out on May 4, which is Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, which is great. I shouldn't say that because I'm under embargo, but it will be great. There you go.
I think the game's been released on the Wii U already. I think we can safely say that the game's pretty flipping all right. And
yeah, but Nintendo's pretty strict about these things, so
I haven't reviewed it yet.
Yeah, exactly. Hyrule Warriors comes out on May 18, and, well, I'm not under embargo yet because I haven't got a review copy, but that game is great, or will be great, and on the Switch it'll be great too. Little Nightmares also comes out on May 18. Mm. That's a really cool puzzle, gothic Tim Burton thing.
It's a real fun game.
Yeah, it's great. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff that comes out that's also on PS3, such as the Harvest Moon and the Street Fighter Collection. And that month finishes off for the Switch with a port of Yonder, which is the otherwise known as the Go on Adventures with Your Gruffle game, which is great. Gruffles being a cow thing, but in Yonder they're really cute.
It sounds like someone's sneezing.
It sounds... Yeah, it might sound like that, but they're the cutest digital animal thing ever made, I think, and Yonder's a really nice game. Very sweet, no violence, open world, and well worth looking forward to. Also Aussie developed. So
I've that got something was controversial.
Well, Matt's got something controversial.
I love Yonder very, very much. It's a very good game, but I don't see the appeal of Gruffles. There, I said it.
Matt.
Podcast is done. Goodbye, everyone. Have a good evening, whatever.
Mic drops.
It's over. It's over.
Matt, I bet you're one of those red panda guys or foxes or whatever they are.
Yes.
From Yonder. Yeah, that's right. You're one of those people.
I like
wow. Anyway,
suddenly got very like intense, you know, angry for almost no reason.
I will protect my gruffles to the death. Gruffle, Alan, what have I missed?
Hi, what have you missed? Well, there's a big old game that has a great soundtrack, and there's actually two games before it that also have great soundtracks, and they're making a couple of dancing games over them. What could they be? Well, glad you asked, other me. Persona 3 Dancing Moon Knight's coming out on the 24th of May with Persona 4 Dancing All Night on PS4 as well. And that, Persona 5 Dancing Star Knight, which is going to be rad.
Is that just Japan or is that worldwide? That release
I believe date? That's worldwide.
Okay, cool. That's really great.
I'm very excited. I cannot wait to dance to like Mass Destruction, I think it's called, in the Baby, 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 Baby song. It's a great song.
Absolute and don't forget, I think it's not too late, if you do go and order the special super duper whopper duper legendary whatever it's called edition from Japan, you'll also get a download code for Persona 4 Dancing All Night on PS4. Which, and that'll be the only way that you can actually get that. And that's an amazing game on the Vita, and it has Risei in it, so it's awesome by default.
Yeah, it's a pretty good game.
It is.
I know that no one here will actually care about it, but I think it's really funny that we are in this year of 2018 and State of Decay 2 is finally releasing, and I don't think anyone knows about it or cares. And I'm kind of a little bit upset for them, but also they're making a zombie game. So, like, what do you want? I've not seen a zombie game recently that I've thought, wow, that's really unique. I wonder why that is.
Tell me more.
Yeah, zombie games are a bit... I think Dying Light was the last zombie game that was even worth looking at.
That game was pretty good, actually. And that was at least 4 years ago now. Because that came out pretty close to the PS4, I think.
It did. Yeah. I must say, actually, on a side, I'm so pissed off at that developer because that's the developer that also did Dead Island and stuff, and that's a Polish dev, actually. And they had another game that was coming which looked amazing. I can't remember what it's called.
It was a medieval thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it looked like Heretic or Hexen, you know, those old first-person shooters. And it was like in these gothic castles and all painkiller, you know, those kinds of gothic castles and zombies and skeletons and dark cloak wizards and all that kind of stuff, and it would have been amazing, but then they canned it.
Yeah. Bastards. Yeah, how could they? How dare they? How dare they cancel a project?
Too busy working on zombies.
Crizumbles.
I was going to say something else about that, but I didn't.
This is actually a PG podcast, Matt. We're not allowed to say things like that anymore.
I was very good at catching myself. under the new lordship of Alan, podcast master.
Is new rule, no swearing. PG podcast. Yeah, there
is. This is a Christian podcast. Thank you very much.
Podcast, PG.
So, Matt, what are you looking forward to next month?
I am looking forward to a couple of games that you forgot to mention because that's, I guess, just what you do now. So one game is Pillars of Eternity 2.
Mm-hmm.
Which comes out, I think it's quite early in May on PC. And after the first game being as good as it was, I'm very much looking forward to it, to the point that I'll play it on PC, even though I prefer not to play games on PC when I can avoid it.
Well, you're doing that wrong. You're doing that wrong, Matt, because it comes out on Switch later this year. That's why I left it off the list. I'm going to talk about it when it comes out on the Switch, because I've always wanted, you know, Baldur's Gate stuff on my handhelds. And...
No, it's coming to Switch. That'll be a good game for Switch, actually.
It is. Yes, it is coming to Switch. And it hasn't actually been announced for PS4 yet, which is hilarious. It's PC and Switch only at this stage.
Oh.
No, not yet.
Oh, maybe I'm getting confused with one of the other games that of that style. That other one that I keep forgetting the name of it. Came out on PC last year. Anyway, so there's that, and there is Super Mega Baseball 2 comes out. On the first, there you go. Which is, if the two didn't give it away, it's a sequel to a game called Super Mega Baseball, which is probably one of the best sports games ever made.
Better than Mario Strikers.
What
is it better than Mario Strikers?
I haven't played that, so maybe I'm not qualified to call it the best sports game ever made. I didn't hear what Matt said.
I said that's a big call, huge call. Oh.
That's very good.
It's like in a world where Sega Soccer Slam exists or existed once upon a time.
And FIFA Street. FIFA Street. Such a good game series. Okay. Yes, yeah, so Super Mega Baseball.
I'm just looking at Super Mega Baseball screenshots now, and it looks decent.
It's very like cartoony. It looks very like a bad cartoony arcade style game, but then you play it and it's really, well, it is if you want it to be, but it's also really deep, kind of not so much simulation, but just the tactics and the strategy of playing baseball. It captures that really well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that comes out on the 1st of May. So if you're interested in that, give it a big old suss.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's a game that made me go from, well, the first game, obviously, not the sequel, made me go from not caring about baseball to liking it. So
that's pretty good.
Any sports game that can do that is, yeah, that's impressive. That's obviously worth a look.
Yeah, for sure.
And on all that note, we now know what we'll all be playing through May, and that'll be a bit too much. I don't think we'll get through all the games that we want to add to the backlog and all that kind of crap.
I'm still going to keep playing God of War. I can hear everyone groaning. It's okay.
We are going to talk about God of War in this podcast, but not right now. We'll just put a muzzle on Alan for a moment.
Game of May.
And we'll talk about a different. We got some music from a different God of War. Well, not really, but Prince of Persia. So that's a PlayStation 2 platform adventure game thingy. It was amazing. Had amazing soundtrack, amazing music, and God, I wish Ubisoft would stop making Assassin's Creed games to make a new Prince of Persia. That would be nice. Just take a break, Ubisoft. Give us what we want. Anyway, some music, and we'll come back and talk about something else.
And welcome back, everyone. Alrighty, so we've had a bit of an interesting week, and we've been talking a lot on the DDNet Slack about what makes a game cinematic. And we've had a bunch of, you know, very heated discussions so far about what, you know, what makes a game truly, in air quotes, cinematic, and whether or not that's kind of a derogatory term at this point, unfortunately. So I'm going to sort of handball this off to Matt to, you know, give us a little bit of a rundown of the big old situation. So you want to have a bit of explanation there, Matt?
Well, I assume you're talking about me.
Yes, I am talking about you. Oh, sorry, Ed. Same person.
Well, I mean, it was kind of one of the interesting things about cinematics in video games is the way they've kind of transitioned. So a couple of generations ago, you had people like Kojima doing cinematic cutscenes or cinematic games that had like 45-minute cutscenes that you're forced to sit there and watch, and they weren't particularly interesting. I hate Kojima. But anyway.
Okay. Well, okay. Alrighty. Anyway. glancing over that.
That was the idea that developers had back then, was if you wanted to do cinematics, you needed FMVs, you needed cutscenes, you needed to, you know, stop the player from playing at the time. But that's kind of evolved in the last, over the last generation or two, where the cutscenes themselves have been kind of, the cinematic qualities have been kind of built into the game itself. And rather than cutscenes, you have those kind of dialogue sequences where you still maintain control of your character, but they're framed in such a way that they're still very cinematic and they're obviously still pushing the story. I think, you know, Assassin's Creed was probably the first one for me that really kind of stood out as doing that, where you'd actually go, you know, walking through town with your mentor or whoever who was telling you, you know, what things are going down and what needs to happen next. And then you'd seamlessly transition into, you know, the mission quests and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, all of that would happen without, you know, cutscenes breaking things up. And I think, you know, we'll talk about God of War more in the third section, but God of War is probably the epitome of that kind of approach to cinematic design now, at the moment at least, because it has those long cuts where there's no camera shifts, and again, you kind of maintain control of your character throughout all of it. So I think cinematics have changed a lot over the last generation, and I think probably for the better, it seems to be more seamless now than it used to be with games a generation or two ago.
Yeah.
Those are my thoughts.
I absolutely agree with you. So the issue that I found a lot with, you know, the concept of cinematics in games is that it's often so heavily tied to this idea that you will sit down and you will watch, which is not the case, because games can obviously do so much more with that. And I would argue something like the Stanley Parable is just as cinematic and just as, you know, engaging because of that, because it knows that it is a game, and then it knows that the cinematic qualities that a game can have are so much more different to anything else in the entire, you know, world of art. So I'm really happy that I don't have to sit down and watch the cutscene from Metal Gear Solid 4, which lasts for an hour and a half. And if you skip, you lose vital story information that's at the end of the cutscene. So I'm very, very happy that that sort of thing is no longer really a problem. And I honestly think that the more that we see of people experimenting with what games can do with involving the player, the more that we'll actually get into more interesting stuff. Particularly the first game I noticed really to have this was Batman Arkham Asylum. Back in 2008, I want to say. That was one of the first games where I was like, this feels like I'm playing a Batman movie, but I'm in control the entire time and it feels smooth. So yeah, that was probably the most like, whoa, this is really, really cool. This looks and makes me feel like a Batman, even though I'm just a, you know, like small little boy who's like 13 at the time. So that's absolutely the way to go, and I cannot be more excited again after playing God of War and seeing what they've done with that, which we'll go into soon. It feels like it's actually, you know, moving onwards towards a greater point of view, which is fantastic. And yeah, I'm very chuffed about the entire situation. It looks great. It's, so far
it's interesting how it's interesting how fluid people's understanding of what cinematic is, or how poorly defined I think it is within the context of video games. Because one thing, you know, you look at something like Persona 5, for example, no one really calls Persona 5 cinematic, and yet, you know, it has a very complex narrative. It's got, you know, all those cutscenes which we used to attribute to being cinematic and all of that kind of stuff, but nobody really calls it cinematic. So
that's one of the things point, actually, yeah.
One of the things I find really interesting about the games industry is this use of the word cinematic. I mean, what does that actually mean? And I don't think anybody's actually come up with a strong, you know, a solid definition that you can point at a game and say, yep, that's cinematic. And then immediately everybody kind of knows what you mean when you say cinematic, but nobody knows specifically what that actually refers to.
It's the buzzword of Dark Souls.
Yeah, it's the Dark Souls of buzzwords.
it needs to be a definite. Can we just like require someone to define it for us?
Yeah, we'll leave that to Matt.
Matt, it's your job now.
All right, it means it has the qualities of cinema.
Nice, good.
There you go. Do with it what you will.
Now, I was expecting you to sort of just dump off the podcast immediately as soon as we handballed that one to you.
That's something I've thought about a lot, actually. I've never come up with any kind of satisfying answer other than having the qualities of cinema, whatever that means. I think there was a time, and this still carries on a lot, where people thought it meant has lots of cutscenes, and that, as you pointed out, Alan, is not necessarily the case, because a lot of very cinematic games don't have lots of cutscenes. And that's a good thing, broadly speaking. I don't think that retaining control of your character is necessarily always a good thing. And I can think of lots of games that have had that kind of thing where, well, instead of cutscenes, we'll just have characters talking at one another while you control your character and walk around in circles. Games like some of the, I think, Grand Theft Auto games did that a lot. And me, that having control of your character, there's nothing to be gained from it. And when you don't have that kind of traditional style of cutscene, you lose a lot of the benefit of controlled camera work and that sort of stuff. And so I think there's a balance there, and there's still a place for that style of cutscene. And to Yakuza 6 would be a very good recent example where, like, the first hour maybe of the game, you can just put your controller down except for like one 30-second tutorial fight. The rest of it is just cutscenes where you have no control, and at the same time they are very interesting and well directed and well put together, that it almost didn't feel like I was sitting there going, oh, I wish this cutscene would end so I could get on to playing the game. It just felt like a necessary part of the game.
Yeah, for sure.
So what you're saying, Matt, is that Kojima didn't actually direct Yakuza 6?
No, I'm saying it was directed by people who have a better understanding.
That it was actually interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
To be real, though, having played Yakuza 0 fairly recently, I've not played 6 yet, but that was one of the first games in a long time where I just didn't skip any cutscenes because they were so well directed, they were so well timed and paced and even acted, which is very strange for me to be thinking that, like, as a video game, these are voice actors and the character models are so detailed and so, like, interesting to look at that it feels like a real thing. Like, I'm not going to spoil it, but there's a scene in Yakuza 0 where it's quite dramatic and there's almost a honor killing, and it's one of the hardest things I've ever seen in a game, and it's great. And I remember sitting back and thinking, this has progressed so much since Final Fantasy X, where the camera work is like, look at the breasts.
Well, I did. But
I know you did, Matt. I'm well aware that you did.
The thing is, the Yakuza is a really good example for me because I watch a lot of Yakuza films out of Japan, and one of the things that makes Yakuza games very cinematic to me is I actually use the same actors, especially Yakuza 0. It actually pulls in a whole bunch of specialist actors who in Japan, not particularly well-known outside of Japan, but in Japan they're really well-known for making those kind of B-grade, full gore, lots of nudity Yakuza films, and that's an entire genre in Japan. It doesn't get exported much, unfortunately. But for me, then seeing those actors kind of all modeled so well in the game, I was immediately thinking, well, you know, this is just like those films. And I was creating that, that connection that Matt was talking about when he said that the kind of definition of a cinematic game is a game that has cinematic qualities. That's kind of a jokey throwaway line, I guess, but it definitely applies to Yakuza. And I think even the people in the West probably don't necessarily know those actors, I certainly get the sense that these are proper actors performing in roles in those games. So, and I think Yakuza 6 does a really good job with putting, what's his name, Beat Takeshi in there, because everybody knows who he is, and he kind of steals the scene every time he's in it. So it's a really good example of how to do cutscenes well. And I think games
Takeshi, oh, what?
Yeah, beat Takeshi's in it. Yeah.
I didn't know that was him. I knew I recognized him from somewhere.
You just blew Alan's mind.
I did. That's probably the biggest actor the series has ever had.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's great. It's great. Without spoiling anything, because this happens really, really early on, there's this scene at the very start, the first time you meet this character in the game. He's sitting there kind of like this old, grizzled veteran Yakuza, and he's eating a parfait, which is... It's that hilarious.
That's a very Yakuza thing, actually.
It's a very Yakuza thing, but it's also a very Beat Takeshi thing. That's his kind of offbeat sense of humor with those kind of more adult or more violent roles that he plays. So, yeah, I thought that was a brilliant touch. It was a very cinematic way of opening, you know, that character in the game. So, yes, if you play Yakuza 6, well, you should play it for a million other reasons, but one of the reasons that you should play it is definitely to see that performance, because it's amazing.
And also the game's pretty good, at least from what I've heard.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's up there. Hopefully people actually bought the thing, because so many people ended up with it for free. Thanks to Sega screwing up. I really hope people went and bought it.
Massive cock up.
Whoops.
Yeah, just, oh no, oh sorry guys, we don't release the whole game as a demo. Oh, it's so ridiculous. People are bad at their jobs. It's fine. It's fine. I do want to give a quick shout out, though, to the Yakuza 6 Special Edition, which came with a couple of, I believe, tumblers, like glass, like whiskey tumblers, which I would have bought if they were in a store. I would have bought it immediately because it looks so cool. It's the end goal, is to just have a set of whiskey tumblers from every single game series that I can. And also get a massive tattoo of a dragon so I can start calling myself the Dragon of Dojima. Anyway... Notwithstanding my horrible tattoo decisions, we're going to have a bit of a cheeky move on, because I believe it's time to talk about another game that just came out, and I've been wanting to talk about it for about the last half an hour or so. So we're going to go to some music.
We are.
What music?
Dragon's Crown.
Oh, okay.
Dragon's Crown, because that's coming out next month. It's great music. We want people to play this game because it's that good and the music's good. So enjoy. We'll come back and we'll talk about Alan's game.
Hooray.
That's my God of War thing.
That was an impressive start, Alan.
That was the only... I mentioned this to the rest of the crew in our little break there, that I would be starting it off unconventionally because I just wanted to shout Ares. And I was also going to shout Calliope as well, but my voice can't handle that right now as much as I'd love to say otherwise. I just can't wait to push away my daughter in, like, hell. It's fine. I don't know if you guys remember that. God of War Chains of Olympus. I believe there is a quick time event where your daughter is hugging your leg and you have to push her away. It's one of the most emotionally confusing things I've ever seen in my life. Anyway, the new God of War is way better. Sorry. Alrighty. God of War just came out. I went out and picked up a copy because everyone was saying it was the coming of the third son. They were right, in my opinion. I know that there's other opinions in this crew so far that are not necessarily as glowing as mine, but still positive. I don't know. This is the PS4 system seller as far as I'm concerned right now. It's real damn good. It's real damn good. I would even go as so far as to say it is a masterpiece. I can hear Matt groaning.
Ooh.
I can hear every Matt in the world groaning.
Oh, Alan.
I'm going to use the world serpent's voice from now on.
Okay, so here's the thing. I mean, God of War did come out, believe it or not.
It did come out, yes.
Know that.
What?
A lot of people have bought it, I imagine. A lot of people are probably playing it. And I think on an objective level, I think it's pretty hard to say that this game isn't enjoyable. I'd be very surprised if there was even, you know, 1% of people out there who played God of War who didn't find something that was really enjoyable about it. And it is a lot of fun, and I think it's an amazing piece of entertainment. I think it's about
He's used entertainment instead of art. You know that he's going to go into a rant soon.
No. This is the thing. Every time I talk about God of War, people think I'm criticizing it. I'm not. I think it's an amazing game. I think it's, I love adventure films, and I think it's, you know, the video game equivalent of Darn the Avengers in the sense of in terms of size and scale and just the sheer proficiency in which it's put together, it's kind of flawless. But, and there's the but, and that's
why flawless, people can go, but it's flawed.
But no, it's flawless, but it's not art, and I think that's the line I draw. I think, you know, people just watching, if you go on Twitter and look at how people are talking about God of War, it's like they're talking about it like it's this kind of, you know, life-changing experience, and it's like this, you know, masterpiece that's, you know, the epitome of what video games are capable of. And if it really is the epitome of what video games are capable of, maybe I need to tap out, because I don't know. I think that if we're going to talk about games as an art form, we need to look at something beyond them being just entertaining in terms of looking for our masterpieces. And that's kind of the line I've been taking. People think I'm criticizing God of War. It's not criticizing it, because what it's trying to do, it does, you know, near perfectly. But is it up there with Citizen Kane or, you know, Dali's work or in painting, or is it, you know, is it Shakespeare? No, it's really not.
We also don't have the hindsight of time to, like, to differentiate yet, so it's hard for us to say this now, but I absolutely can see myself still thinking about this in, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, going off my experience with the first, you know, 15 or so hours, which I will finish.
Thinking about what, I guess, is the question, Alan. What are the themes of God of War? What's the depth?
Family, absolutely family. It's all about Kratos and family. It's great. And if you have played the prior God of War games, you'll know why that's such a big deal. There's a very, very quick section, and I know that Matt C has only played the prologue part.
I don't care about spoilers, so spoil away.
No, I'm going to go and mention a part at that. So there's a part where Atreus, the son, like, tries to shoot an arrow. He doesn't shoot the bow. He just throws the bow at the deer. So he tries to hunt deer, and Kratos tells him, only fire when I say fire, and he doesn't listen, and Kratos runs up and starts shouting in, like, the old God of War style, and then catches himself, like, takes a breath, and is like, only fire when I say fire again. It's like, it's this really, really cool moment, because you've seen Kratos go from this man who literally just shouts Ares and, like, is meant to be with his loving wife that he actually horribly murdered, and is shouting her name as well for no reason. So to go from that to this new Kratos, who's clearly trying to be better than he is, but is really struggling with that concept, I think is really, really cool. And there's a lot of really, really small moments, which again, I do not want to spoil for anyone because dear Lord, they're good. Where it does a lot of really, really interesting, genuinely heartfelt things. And I don't think anyone would have ever expected a game in the God of War series to ever even attempt that, not less alone pull it off as well as it has right now, because this is making The Last of Us look like a child's presentation, unfortunately. And I think that's incredible for a game that's about, you know, the God of War, to go and do this really in-depth family stuff where I have so much more sympathy for Atreus than any other character in the entire, you know, what group of PS4 games at the moment, I guess, just because he is such a realistic, despite being, you know, the son of a god, he's the most realistic, genuine, like, little boy character who just, like, doesn't, like, he doesn't understand what the reasons for Kratos' actions are. I think it's really, really cool. And at the moment, I'm going to absolutely say that it's one of the coolest things that I've seen recently in gaming. I will say, though, there's a couple of parts where it's like, it princesses you, where it's like, oh, we're almost at our goal, but wait, there's a new thing that's going to stop you. Better go find a thing to stop that so it doesn't stop you. Which is kind of annoying, but like, it gives me more time to play the game, and that's kind of the best thing ever right now. So yeah, I don't know. Game's real damn good. I'd say that it is a masterpiece as far as I'm concerned. I don't know if it'll hold up in the next 5 years, but you know, whatever. I like it. I like it a lot. I'll go back and play it again.
I mean, the thing is, I mean, I don't disagree with kind of anything you said there. It's a strong story that tells, you know, an interesting look at Kratos, especially for people who have played the previous God of Wars, and you know, the father son and the journey to redemption and all that kind of stuff is there, and it's quite obvious. But to compare to something like, I'm just going to say it, Nier Automata. To compare to Nier Automata, which is just so dense and so layered and so nuanced and so thematically rich, I don't see God of War as comparing to that game. I think they're both very different games. I think they're both very worthwhile. But if you play God of War, you're looking to have a good time. You're looking to, you know, mash buttons. You're looking to be, you know, Kratos, and you're looking to have that kind of quite simple story told well. Whereas you look at Nier Automata, you're looking at the kind of density and the layers and the nuance. And I think when we talk about games as art, if it doesn't have those kinds of layers, it doesn't hold up as a work of art, as a masterpiece. And I think that's where the difference is. People will not be writing about God of War, I think. I'm going to make this prediction. People will not be writing about God of War as a great piece of art 40 years down the track, like they do with Citizen Kane, or trying to puzzle through what Citizen Kane means, or, you know, really breaking it down. People won't do that with God of War, because God of War is not designed that way, and that's fine. And I think that's a great thing. And I think God of War executes on it all perfectly well. But yeah, I don't see the layers of depth in God of War, and I don't think I've seen anybody indicate it otherwise to me. I haven't seen any kind of stories written. I haven't seen any analysis of the game. Admittedly, it's new, so that might be coming.
It is a weird
game. I haven't been wrong with this stuff before. I'm still waiting to see people write about the depth of, you know, The Last of Us. I'm still waiting to see people write about the depth of any number of other blockbuster games, which weren't designed to be that way.
Like, I understand what you're saying. However, I think given that video game academia is still quite a new concept, it's going to take time before this sort of analysis will become more common in, you know, in the same way that film analysis would be, or that literary analysis would be.
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, there's already stuff out there about Nier Automata. I've seen great articles about, you know, Spec Ops. There's been entire books written about it. So that analysis is there, where the game is deep enough to deserve it. I just don't.
Those things also did come out quite a bit of time after the game was released, and I think, honestly, I haven't finished the game yet, so I can't exactly tell you, you know, X, Y, Z. But from where it's going right now, I can see a lot of really interesting stuff being developed
very, very soon. And I think that's real cool. And I really hope that I'm not wrong, because I think it's freaking cool.
Well, and I'll be the first to admit I'm wrong if I do start to see that kind of analysis come. And I'll be, you know, if I see people writing about this game in a way that I didn't see when I was playing through it, then so much the better. I'll be the first to admit I'm wrong.
But... You know what? I'm going to write that article, Matt. I'm going to call it Data Boy. I'm going to look at the use of the word boy within literary context. So
you do that, Alan, and you change my mind on it, and I'll be the first to admit it. I'll even say so on the podcast, and then you can hold that podcast up as you proved me wrong and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I haven't been wrong about this stuff before. I don't think. I can't remember a time I've been wrong about this stuff before.
Usually there's always on a first.
But there is always a first, and I'd love for people to prove me wrong. I really do love God of War. I think it's a great game. I finished it, and I don't generally finish games I don't have to play for review. So the fact I was able to sit there and kind of get so absorbed in it that I didn't really follow, you know, I wasn't watching time, and I just kind of plowed through it because I was enjoying it that much, shows how good it is as a game. And certainly I didn't do that with The Last of Us. I kind of gave up on that game because it was crap within a couple of hours.
It was very hard to play.
It was a terrible game. But God of War is a brilliant game. I'm just waiting to see it kind of prove itself as this masterpiece that everybody's talking about, because I didn't see it in there. So I'm going to need to see somebody else prove it to me, I guess.
Fair. I will also say very, very quickly, I don't know what difficulty you played it on, Matt. I know that Matt's currently playing it on easy, I think.
I don't know what difficulty
you played it on easy. I played
it. I know Matt's playing it on easy.
No.
I played it on hard.
So Matt, Ed Matt has played it on hard. Matt C has played it on easy. I'm playing on hard right now. Would you say that the experience on hard is better, Matt?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so for me, it's that kind of same story as Dark Souls. Jesus, I said Dark Souls.
Oh, no. No, podcast is over, banned.
No. It is, for me, the same kind of thing as Dark Souls. Dark Souls is better because it's hard, and I feel like God of War is better because that's hard. I think they've done the right thing in putting that easier mode in there, because this game needs to sell 70 billion quazillion copies in order to make its money back.
It was a 5-year development project.
Yeah, so they need it to be accessible, which is why there's an easy mode, and that's a good thing.
But if you do,
to be honest, I mean, to be honest, I've kind of come around on Matt's argument that perhaps Dark Souls should also look at that, because being more popular is probably a good thing for these games. But I do think that the experience is more pure the harder up you can play it.
Having said that, do not play Give Me God of War. Do not do that. So that was my mistake. I did that at my first run and got maybe an hour and a half into the game and spent maybe 5 hours in the game. So
yes, you need to be able to make progress. If you can't make progress, there's no point in playing it on the...
It is unreasonably difficult, so do not make my mistake. Just try it on hard if you can. And if you don't like it, then you can go down, but... Honestly, hard mode's the way to go, as far as I'm concerned. There's been too many fights so far where I have been on, you know, the final slither of health, and that is such a good feeling when you get to that final, like, the execution thingy. I don't know what it's called. The click the right stick move. And just doing that when you've got nothing else left is so satisfying. It's so good. Game's great. 10 out of 10. Best game. Best game ever made. Every other game is banned.
Except Sexy Brutal.
Except for Sexy Brutal, which leads us in. That was the plan all along. Sexy Brutal again.
What are your thoughts about God of War so far, Matt?
I think so. I need to preface this by saying I've only played... I don't know if I finished the prologue. I've played like an hour or so of it. But I... I'm struggling to get further than that because I keep getting distracted by other games that I'm enjoying more.
and that's one of the 1%. The 1% that I talked about before that doesn't particularly get God of War or doesn't enjoy it so much.
I think maybe you're right that part of it is that I'm playing it on easy because I always play games on easy until a game gives me a reason not to play it on easy, such as the combat actually being enjoyable or interesting. Which so far I have not found to be the case in God of War, but I'll try playing it on normal or hard and see if that...
It really does change.
Makes it more worthwhile. But I think the main thing that I am not liking about it. And given what so many people are saying, I'm hoping that it gets past this at some point. But at the moment, it just seems like another game about, oh, man pain. I don't know how to be a father, and now I've got a kid, so I have to learn how to be an adult human. And there have been so many games like that already, like The Last of Us, like Uncharted 4, like just everything. And I'm just...
So you've picked out two games there from the same developer.
Yeah. Yes, I have. It's a story that I'm already very tired of, and it like has already been done better in The Walking Dead and something like Popo and Yo. That it's just not interesting to me, and I find it tiresome. And the whole, and I know it's God of War, so it's kind of mandatory, but the game starts with a woman who doesn't even have the decency of being given a name.
She does have a name.
Killed off.
You would have heard her name. You've heard her name several times in the prologue.
In the prologue, I don't remember hearing her referred to by name.
She's Faye.
What?
It's Faye.
I haven't heard that anywhere. I've just heard him referring to her as the boy's mother. He talks to the boy, talks to Atreus, and refers to her as your mother.
Who's the boy?
Yeah.
So they actually did a proper like count of the amount of times that boy is said in the game. And it's apparently like 1,227 times.
Sounds about right.
Boy.
I mean, I think Matt's onto something. Like, I think this whole father, not necessarily father, but always father in at the moment. It doesn't have to be, but the father child relationship mechanic seems to be like this replacement. And I think I've read or watch something that makes a similar argument, seems to be a replacement for the whole princess or damsel in distress trope that is more, I guess, culturally acceptable these days, because the princess or the captured princess or damsel in distress is kind of an old and very tired trope that people have kind of given up on, and people don't see as, well, people call it out for being the crap that it is, basically. But then the developers or the storytellers seem to have found this alternative solution in, you know, the father-child relationship. So, yeah, I don't know. Having played Yakuza 6, which we were talking about before, and seeing the kind of the way that that game cleverly works with that father-child dynamic in an interesting and different and subversive manner, it makes it hard to go back to something like God of War. I must admit, I didn't really buy the relationship between the two of them. I was too busy enjoying killing stuff by pressing buttons and enjoying the action. I wasn't completely sold on that father-son thing, especially since, you know, mechanically the son is just a weapon.
He's more than that. He's also a translator.
Well, he's a mechanic. He's treated like a mechanic. I didn't really
call it out, though. He calls out him as a mechanic. He's like, you're only using me because I can read.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop doing this. Which is really
for cool. all the issues I had with The Last of Us, I did think that Ellie was a character beyond the mechanics that she added to the game. Whereas, what's his name? Atreus is a tool. His name is
actually Boy.
Yeah.
Boy, yeah. Boy is a tool. And I think the developers are kind of, I don't know. I was promised this great story about how the Kratos is trying to become a better father, but really somebody should have just called kind of child support on him at the start.
Yeah. And that's the thing, with the way everyone's talking about it, I hope I'm proven wrong and it does grow into something that I can appreciate more. But in the very early stages, I'm not seeing it. And then that makes it hard for me to care enough to keep playing when I could play something like Chusotsu.
Do stick with it, Matt, because I do think that everything picks up in the second half. Maybe not so much the storytelling, but the set pieces become better. The cinematic quality of the game becomes better. Everything really ramps up in the second half, and I really kind of got the appeal of the game from that point onwards. So yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's a 10 out of 10, as Alan would obviously believe.
I think it's an 11 out of 10.
But I think it's a solid 9 out of 10 to give it a score. I think it's just a lot of fun.
How could
it's
you give it a 9? You've been paid by Microsoft.
Yeah. Oh, that I wasn't saying it's not a 9 out of 10. I'm just surprised to hear.
I mean, it's not Horizon. Horizon's
a blockbuster. A 9 out of 10 is very high praise.
Hey. So I'm the guy that gives everything.
Being owned by Microsoft now, so we're going to give Gears of War 4 an 11.5 and God of War a -1 because it has the same same three letters. It's illegal. Game's bad. 10 out of 10, bad game.
No, for me, God of War is everything that Horizon should have been, and I regret giving Horizon a 7 out of 10 or whatever I gave it, because it's so much worse than that. It's a terrible game. I can't stand it. But I think God of War is a game I'll be able to replay. I think it's very enjoyable. I think it's everything that Sony wants from its AAA blockbuster stuff, and good on them. Now
it's also a Metroidvania.
let's bring on Dreams. Let's bring on a PS4 game I care about now. Exclusive.
Agony.
Ellen, you just said the one word that can make me excited about any game, and why has nobody said this about God of War before, if that's the case?
What, agony?
No, Metroidvania.
It's a Metroidvania, yeah.
Why are you the first person to tell me this? There have been
Because no one has seen the glasses except for me. It's driving me crazy. Because I went through and there was a door in the prologue area, and I was like, oh, this door looks like it's going to be opened later. And then the boy, sorry, not Atreus, the boy, says, you can't still open it, can you? And
I got that far. I remember that. I thought it was going to be like...
Nope, that is absolutely Metroidvania stuff. Oh, the world opens up kind of into Metroid Prime. It's very similar to Metroid Prime, actually. So if you're into that sort of game, you'll probably like Dad of War.
All right, I'm looking forward to playing more of Dad of War.
Dad of Boy.
Now that you said that.
Alrighty,
and on that note, I will say that one thing that I don't think anybody who is even remotely rational could say is God of War has, could say it doesn't, but God of War has amazing music. It's an amazing soundtrack.
It's real good.
It's very cinematic.
And what does that mean?
It means it's probably played by about 100 different musicians. It, fully orchestrated, of course, and very epic in feel, very powerful, very suitable, I guess, to God of War and all of that. So we'll finish the podcast off this week with some music from God of War. Enjoy, and thanks for listening, and we will be back next week.
Ares.
somebody says Ares, I think Aerie as in Final Fantasy VII.
But Ares, though. My favorite quote from every single game is just shouting Ares in the exact same way over and over again. It's perfect.